Hey, everybody. This is Logan and Ben.
Hey.
And this is Logan and Ben's Untitled Futurism Podcast. But no longer will it be untitled, because right now we are brainstorming.
We are developing a title we speak. What we have so far is Laser Fuck Dimensions, or LFD for short. We're debating just saying Laser Fuck. Then there's The Fucking Future, speaks for itself. Then we started to get a little more abstract. Tornado Voltage. Atomic Fist Calendar.
These are just wild word associations.
All over the place.
There's no...
All over the place.
And we really started off there with a lot of swears.
We haven't landed on anything that could even be remotely considered a, like, viable actual title.
No, not for anything remotely commercial.
No.
But I think we should go with The Fucking Future, and maybe they can do that thing. I hate it when they do this.
Bleep it where they, like,
they do the bleeps. Yeah, and if it's right, if it's in writing, they do, like, the, you know,
they do the
at
asterisk.
Sign.
Yeah, yeah.
That's bullshit. Here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to push for them to write out the word F-U-C-K. Fuck. In the actual title of the thing.
Okay.
But I'm actually going to be totally okay with them using the symbols.
Entire position.
Like, I suppose so.
If we're going to talk about this stuff when we're, like, being recorded, you have to write it down and then go, here's my plan, Ben. And then there's silence for, like, 15 seconds while
you
write it. Then I read it, I'm like, no, that's a good plan. That's a good plan. And that way Dez, one of our producers, can't know what we're saying.
All right. So... So can we cheers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. To the fucking future.
To the fucking future.
Yeah!
With Ben and Logan. Alex is our comptroller for the evening.
Hello, comptroller Alex.
Hey, comptroller Alex. So it should be noted, we also just moved to a actual podcasting facility.
There's foam on the walls.
We're wearing headphones and we supposedly can hear ourselves. And I'm actually looking at a television with people on it surveilling us.
Oh, God, there's a camera above it so they can see us too. It's demented as fuck.
It's pretty bad. And they even have this special Vornado fan that I assume just sends out waves of cool, refreshing air without being picked up by microphones.
It is impressive.
That's incredible.
You know, it's weird though, because if we can. I mean, you can see them. I can see them. I can't really see them unless I crane my ass around. But you guys are like a joke testing ground.
We really are.
If we're mildly amusing, is we can just look at you. And if you're like bored as shit, we can just be like, okay, so this is not working at all. Or if we're getting some chuckles, you're either like humoring us.
But the issue with that now is it Schrodinger's cat that changes based on you observing it? Or am I just... totally redefining what Schrodinger's cat is.
I mean, I think you're stretching a physics thought experiment into a further metaphor of its, like...
Well, there's that whole thing where if you watch somebody, it will change how they'll behave.
Sure, but that's...
So, like, sociology experiments.
Yeah.
Or is that a different... That has a different, like, German-sounding name, isn't it? Like, the
Mind-Hoff
complex.
I think it's like, the same thing, effectively. Well, okay. I think in base philosophical terms, it's kind of the same thing.
But Schrodinger's cat is at, like, atomic, subatomic
yeah,
matter
and
being
and that's
watched.
The thing is, like, everybody makes this stuff where they're like, ooh, quantum berries will help your liver process things better. And, like, that's the whole point of a lot of modern physics is that quantum mechanics and general relativity don't meet yet. So you can't just say stuff that happens on the quantum level translates up to the macro level. Because it doesn't.
So you're saying a subatomic particle isn't like a person.
Right.
Although, dude, did you hear about I think they're physicists, studied the flow and movement patterns of moshers at a metal concert.
Shut your mouth. Tell me more.
And they move exactly like excited gas particles. Like the same models they use to predict the behavior of particles in a excited state of gas, like if it heated up air, for instance,
heated up
oxygen, moves exactly the same as new metal moshers.
So
you know what? I shouldn't specify new metal. I don't know what is only moshers.
Only new metal moshers.
Limp Bizkit, Korn, yes, excited gas particles.
So what's scary to me about that, what immediately springs to mind for me to that is there is no free will. Because if a group of people spazzing the fuck out at a new metal concert behave in the same way that the average beaker of air being heated under experimental conditions does, doesn't that just imply terrifying things about, like, our ability to move independently of like Newtonian mechanics?
Well, there's I think when you're trying to predict a human, and let's throw out whatever we plan to talk to you tonight.
The only list that I have are the words free for all, food of the future, and then the word rats with an exclamation point and some ugly squares that I drew around.
I think we're really giving people an inside look at the process tonight, for better or worse.
You people don't want to know how the sausage is made.
So we should talk about the rats thing because that is also very current. Although by the time this comes out, it will have been very old.
Oh my God, we're making a podcast about the future in the past.
It's wild, right? What will us right now be doing? There you go. That.
That was remarkably childish of me. Yeah, I apologize.
So was all our titles for the podcast. And I think we completely lost track of that whole titling thing, but I think the fucking future with a clink.
Oh, yeah, with
the
clink.
To the funky future with clink. With the clink. Yeah. If we could get a clink sound effect in there, whoever is editing this.
I bet. Here, let's get up near.
Okay, so this is how we're going to. Oh, we're going to give him the clink.
Yeah, we'll give him the clink right now. So
it's like Foley.
Ooh, no, we need more glass, I think. So let's try to make these parts. One,
two, three. I think whatever they use to make glass clinking sounds in movies is probably not actually glass bottles. It's probably like the heel of a woman's shoe striking like a piece of leather tied to a rope.
Or something even weirder, like a melon wrapped in prosciutto being like dropped out of a fourth-story window onto a man from Bulgaria.
That's movie magic. Hey. But anyways, getting back to the idea of volition, specifically in regards to, should we all doubt our ability for free will?
Right.
Because we move exactly like gas particles when we're listening to Limp Bizkit. A large part of that is how much premeditation the involuntary versus involuntary system.
Oh, so let me guess. You're going to suggest to me that in a mosh pit, because you're basically flailing around like an idiot.
And you're using your more lizard brain instincts.
Right.
I think the more lizard brain you use, the more you're going to replicate a liquid. For instance,
any predictable system.
Well, if there's a fire in a building,
uh-huh.
I think they can pretty accurately depict what is going to happen in that case because everybody's goal is very distinct. There's no game theory going on there. There's no value to one decision over the other regarding should I get out of this building or should I stay in this building?
Right.
I guess until you start adding there's some jewelry in the corner and it takes about 10 seconds or so to take that jewelry from its case and people may or may not be looking. When you start adding those confounding variables, then of course, it becomes harder to predict. But let's say there's a barren warehouse. We're all equally spaced apart and a fire starts in one corner and we know where the exit is. I think we can predict the movement of those people fairly well. Right?
Yeah, okay, I can go with that.
To that point, did you hear about House of Cards and the Netflix thing?
Yes, indeed, I did.
So you talk about people being predictable.
Yeah.
So let's catch up our viewers really quickly on this. Do you have the...
Right, yeah. So many of you may or may not be familiar with the Netflix show House of Cards, which is the big, first ever giant, big budget original being made by a web streaming company. It's got Kevin Spacey in it. It is directed by
David Fincher.
Thank you, David Fincher. And it's really good.
And it's a remake of a British political show from
the early 90s, I
sure.
think? Yeah. So the way that they determined who should star in this and who should direct this is Netflix, with their gigantic mountain of user data, realized that all the most valuable demographics that they want to hit love Kevin Spacey and David Fincher directed films.
And British political dramas from the 90s.
Right. You know what's really odd about this? When you look at this, we don't actually have any British political dramas from the 90s in our library, but people are watching them somehow.
Yes.
Anyway, in great numbers.
But I think what was – so that seems like a first-order use of big data, right? And big data is I feel like that's the hot thing for this year.
Oh, it is. Everybody's got a big boner for big data.
Yeah. Big boner for big data. I want
big
that tattooed on my lower back.
Big boners.
Yeah. And big data is just there's so much information we're producing now. And how are we going to leverage that data? Like that's because it's incomprehensible to the human mind.
Right.
Just even the data that the data trail I leave in a single day. Well, that's probably comprehensible. But let's say
sandwich orders, a little bit of porn, stuff for work,
all those things. In Google Glasses, once that comes out.
Oh, I Google that like every day, which is creating some sort of weird recursive loop.
The Google Glasses.
Me googling about Google Glasses.
You see that how it feels. I love that the name of their like last promotional video is "How It Feels." Did you see that?
No.
Really? It's the one where that's where OK Glasses comes from. Have you not? Oh my goodness.
I missed this video.
Okay, so this
I remember people talking about it, but I never.
This is the video that actually shows you what Google Glasses looks like.
Okay.
So it's just like a first-person view of, and there's just like this voice in the background just being like, "Okay, glass," and then like the little UI, the little UI is like, "Take a picture," and like you know it snaps and it's
just really smug, self-satisfied. Yeah. It sure is great to be rich. Hey, glass.
Hey, glass. I love being rich. Well, to tie that off, somebody pointed out like everything this man is doing is the sort of stuff that a rich multi-billionaire from like Simi Valley would do in like 2 weeks, where it's like it cuts from him skydiving to like playing with octopi underwater, scuba diving to like ballet lessons with his daughter. Like,
I would also like to point out, I'm sorry, these are very nice, I'm sure they're very rugged. Who the fuck skydives with a $1,500 pair of face computers?
By the way,
that's what I'm going to start referring to it. I call my iPhone a hand computer. Google Glass will be face computers.
Well, the thing is, I'm convinced. I have not read this anywhere, but I'm just going to say that it's a fact that all the video from that advertisement was made with Google Glasses. So somebody probably did hop out of a plane with Google Glasses on. And the thing is, think about it. I would take my iPhone out I would not take my iPhone out while skydiving. But I definitely take it out in conditions where that iPhone's going to get
fucked up. Yeah, but I'm gonna say right now, you didn't spend $1,500. It's one thing, but would you have done that with an iPhone if you were one of the first people to get an iPhone 6 or 7 years ago?
If it was Logan, come back with all the badass shit you can do with this iPhone.
Certainly. If Apple gave you a free iPhone, it was like, we're going to make it into a commercial.
So then that's what those people are.
Changing the parameters, Logan.
Yes, and this, I'm sure this
is fucking cheating.
This snapshot video is definitely supposed to be like, you know, in 5 years. That's
in
how
5 years, we'll all have so much money, I will be able to octopus swim, skydive, and watch the daughter that I don't have in a ballet recital.
Yes, and then also, like taking their flight lessons. It was basically just like
what
all
the
it was
shit?
Like it was like all the things white people want to do. Like
also, I look forward to the day that the FAA is like, oh yeah, you can totally wear like a commercially produced heads up display on your face while you're piloting a plane. No. No, well, get that the fuck off your face.
I mean, they're doing that. I think the intent is you do this while you drive, too, for directions. Like, that was one of the use cases. They basically show three use cases over and over again. And it's directions, taking photos and video, and then variations of photos and videos. Like, send the photo, get real-time
video. How much
memory
do these things have in them?
I imagine a few gigs, if I had to guess. But the craziest one is, have you ever seen the Catherine Bigelow movie? Catherine Bigelow's for the listeners, Zero Dark Thirty and Hurt Locker and Point Break.
Right.
If you haven't seen Point Break because you're too young, go watch Point
Break. Truly, film of majesty.
And somewhere around the Point Break in the 90s version of Catherine Bigelow, there is Strange Days.
Oh, I remember Strange Days. You see some boobs in that, and I remember being exceptionally excited by that movie as like a 13-year-old because there were boobs.
That's a great reason to watch any movie, really.
Especially when you're 13.
It wasn't as easy as it is now.
No. By the way, to any of our younger listeners, you really fail to understand what a time of plenty you live in regards to so many things. When Logan and I were wee lads, to download the picture of a boob was literally like a 40-minute endeavor.
We would just go canvas construction sites and find torn out photo like
yeah,
that
you
was
know,
like,
you find like an old dirty magazine like in a shoebox.
Is this our like walk to school in the snow? Is like looking for boobs?
Back in my day, I spent an hour prowling around an old construction site just to find a torn up stained copy of Hustler.
Ugh. Anyway, so Strange Days. That whole movie is about this virtual reality system that people wear under toupees, I understand. And
I don't remember that part, but awesome.
Yes, well, because it was shameful to wear these things. And it was more or less
as opposed to toupees that would hide a giant computer.
And it was a...
Hey, Doug, why the fuck you got that toupee? Definitely not because I'm using this illegal and shameful virtual reality device.
Well, and the whole thing was like it would more or less record your real-time experiences and then somebody else could put on, download the experience and experience it themselves in multiple sensory vectors. And there's a crime wave happening, right, where there's this person who's doing sexual assaults by putting the virtual reality thing on. He's recording his experience sexually assaulting somebody, and then he actually takes another one of these things, and they look like octopi, and he puts it on the victim. And then he starts doing a real-time feed, so the victim's experiencing the assailant's point of view.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that's some fucked up shit, right?
I don't remember this movie at all.
That's something like a 12-year-old boy would come up with. Like a really sick 12-year-old boy.
That is dark.
Yeah, and so in Google Glasses, there's one point where he's looking at somebody and he gets a real-time feed of what they're looking, what they're seeing from their Google Glasses. And I was just like I just had this Strange Days flashback. I was like, oh my goodness, it's gonna come true. Like, we're gonna get our Google Glasses Strange Days rape moment any day now. That's my prediction for Google Glasses.
Jesus fucking Christ! That's what you think of when you see this cheerful Google app. Any day now, we're going to get POV rape assault.
That is my – this might get cut out just because it's so dark.
I mean, look, I'd love to say you're wrong, but you're not.
I don't know. You know, it's all about appropriation of technology, right? What's also interesting is they're having all these different hack days about the Google Glasses.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting how other people suggest using it. It's also interesting to hear how many people just don't understand what's possible with Google Glasses.
Right. Well, I'll be really curious. I mean, to me, I think the ultimate difference in this kind of technology between it being a useful tool to being something that is like really, really, really revolutionary is the glasses' capability to do image recognition. Whereby I mean, like, it's one thing for like a mechanic to scoot under your car and be able to pull up a schematic that he can like watch on his Google Glasses, like his heads-up display, and be like, oh, okay, I need to get my hand in here and whatever. It's something else entirely for a mechanic to look at your engine with a Google Glass and have the Google Glass recognize and overlay schematics onto the parts it's looking at.
And I think we're firmly planted in the first of those two.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people imagine that second one where you get the real-time overlays.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're going to get that.
It's not for a while.
For a good long while.
Yeah. The amount of computing required and also just visual recognition technology that's refined enough for it to.
Well, a good example is there's Google Glasses. And Google Glasses augmented reality is looking through glass.
Mm-hmm.
Or in this case, before you ever get to the glasses portion, it's actually just a Geordi-esque headband with a little I assume it's like a piece of projection glass or translucent or transparent LCD in your upper right field of your vision. But for the most part, you do not look through Google Glasses. And, you know, they're partnering with one of the big hipster glasses companies.
Warby Parker.
There we go. They're partnering with Warby Parker to actually develop full-bore glasses. But even in that case, the only part that Google will affect is the upper right field of your vision.
Right.
So you'll never get those real-time overlays. Now,
yeah, and you got to imagine that no matter – there's like physical limitations on how powerful the computing is for something so tiny. So
– yeah, but that – I mean that – and that will change over time.
Sure.
And of course, you could always do the thing where you use your Android phone in the case of Google, and Android phones are a large part of the marketplace to augment your computing power.
Right, right, right.
But – there's the other form of augmented reality, the overlay augmented reality. It's an augmented reality that I think we're maybe used to seeing on our iPhones in a lot of cases, where it takes a video image and then overlays virtual objects onto that video image.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense. I mean,
and you can get somebody just premiered another version of it. It's more or less a head-mounted display, an HMD.
Mm-hmm.
Oculus Rift would be the video game version, and we can talk about Oculus Rift down the line, but. It's a head-mounted display where there's cameras mounted on it. And so what it's doing is taking that camera feed and feeding it to monitors in front of your eyes. And
right.
So then you're actually looking at a pure video display.
Sure.
Ideally, a binocular display or a stereoscopic display.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue with that is that video is always going to have some latency.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's one frame, let's say this is going one – let's say we're doing – 60 frames a second, you're still talking about a 1/60th of a second delay from the camera on the outside to the video feed to your eye. And then you compound that by the fact that even in the best circumstances, you're talking about an HE video signal, which isn't as good as where your eye is focusing.
Right.
And so when you add that all together, what it really means is it's basically shitty vision. Shit vision 2000. And that's the only way you're going to get your overlays. Now, if you do transparent glass and do an overlay, you can do that a monocular version of that, where it's just one piece of glass and it's projecting onto that or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a big issue when you switch to two eyes, because your eyes are at different distances apart. Different people have different focal lengths, and so it becomes that vision of, I'm going to look in a piece of glass and see a 3D vision of a waypoint perfectly mapped to that is, I'm going to say, not feasible for the next 5 to 10 years.
I can buy that. I can buy that fully.
Did anything I said make sense?
A surprising amount, actually.
That's pretty cool.
I'd put it at 90% to 95%.
I'm impressed.
I followed myself along pretty tightly on that. Actually, my inner monologue of shitty jokes dried up, and I was just paying attention, which is pretty rare for me, actually.
I appreciate that. So because this seems like a nice breaking point, let's hop over to our first subject of the night, and that is food.
Oh,
of the future.
Food.
Wait, stop. Not food of the future.
No.
Let's do rats.
Rats!
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 And we're not going to talk about rats of the future. We're going to talk about the badass shit they did with rats.
Tell me about
this,
because you said something about rats, and I was completely in the dark, and then you got super excited.
They built the first mind-to-mind interface between two rats.
If you could.
In different countries, in different hemispheres, on different continents. Yeah. So I think the rats were in North Carolina and South America in labs. It wasn't like one of the rats was just in the middle.
It's just random rat. Right? So we've linked up this rat. Yeah, there's a rat that is just in the street, we think, somewhere in Charlotte.
So I don't know the specifics as to actually how they implemented Zen mind-to-mind interface. I assume they put some sort of circuitry like in the neurons.
It's probably
in the brain.
Like one of those potato batteries where they take a nail and they wrap it in like wire and then they just jam the nail into the rat. And no, that's an experiment that like a demented like future serial killer 12-year-old would do.
Well, I mean,
I'm sure it's very sophisticated.
I feel like that's like the 1930 vision of brain control, where it's like, I put metal to a brain and it works perfectly.
Run a radio wave through it backwards. You know, a radio wave can't run backwards. It can't. Not in the way you mean.
If you reflect it. But anyways, yeah, so they somehow wired these two rats' brains up on different continents in two different labs. And they had one rat, I guess, figure out a puzzle or know a portion of a puzzle that was unknown to the rat elsewhere. And the rat actually used the knowledge that only the other rat had to complete a task to give itself food. Now,
that
of course,
is so fucking cool.
So now, obviously, we can't interview the rat or have the rat be like, it's like I had another eye, or it's like,
right,
I had
right.
a voice in my head. All we know is, or at least all I know from the limited reading I've done, is that this rat totally did something with the help of another rat in a different continent using only the shit they wired up in their brain.
You got to imagine, like, and I'm just like totally, you know, guessing at stuff here, because like, it seems exceedingly unlikely. Like, it would seem exceedingly unlikely to me that if you were to just, like, hook our brains together with just whatever machine they used, that you could, like, look at me and go, like, and I'd hear, like, Logan's voice in my head going, Ben,
what's up, bro?
And I'd be like, Logan, ideally, not much.
Ideally with some reverb.
Yeah, well, yeah, like, yeah.
What's up?
That seems exceedingly unlikely because our brains are most assuredly not in any way, shape, or form evolutionarily adapted to receive brain transmissions and translate them into something we would recognize. So I feel like the way out there guess would be that the rat probably just like knew that stuff.
So,
like it was like it didn't know why. It's sort of like in a dream where you just know that your grandfather has made lasagna and he's super pissed you didn't eat any, even though you're on a cruise in like the Greek islands and he's not there.
I feel like there's the two things that come to mind if you're like, Logan, what does this probably feel like in its incredibly primitive implementation is, firstly, the Iowa Gambler's Test. Are you familiar with the Iowa Gambler's Test?
I'm not. Enlighten me.
The Iowa Gambler's Test is they have two deck of cards. And I think it's if I had to guess, because I'm filling in the blanks here, because it's
just remember, people, this entire podcast start to finish is Logan and I remembering fragments of things we heard once.
I don't know, Wikipedia. So I'm just going to go ahead.
Fine.
And I'm going to go ahead and fabricate stuff.
Fabricate away.
Babe, don't Wikipedia. I'm saying
you're not supposed to.
Yeah,
you
listeners.
You people Wikipedia.
You Wikipedia. You can
and if we're wrong, don't mention it because we don't want to hear it.
But there were two decks, and I had to get. I have to guess that it was a high card wins game because the model is the people want.
Wait,
to.
Is this the game they play at the beginning of Ghostbusters 1?
Go on, tell me. You tell me the game, and I'll tell you if it is.
Okay, so it's Dr. Peter Venkman, and there's this hot woman sitting there, and then an unattractive nebbish gentleman. And they're connected to an electronic.
Fucking hate Nebbish gentlemen.
Dorks!
Dorks!
Oh, God! They're connected to an electroshock device that Dr. Venkman controls. And he draws cards from a deck that only he can see. And if they. He thinks the thought at them. And if they guess properly, then he doesn't shock them. And if they guess wrong, they shock them. But, of course, Dr. Venkman, being the sly dog that he is.
Because he's a total womanizer in
yeah,
that,
so
right?
Yeah, so like he like picks up the card, and the nebbish gentleman gets it wrong, and he shocks him. And then he picks up another card, and the hot woman is like, it's a spade, and it's clearly a star. And he's like, you're right. You're so attuned to things. Everything about your face says that this is not the Iowa Gambler's Test that I just described.
No, I'm just thinking, yeah, he's just taking advantage of this poor woman.
Oh, yeah, he's a total sleazebag in that movie. It's fantastic. Until he meets Dana.
Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah. Cool. And falls in love with her. And then there's the baby, which is...
It's like a demon baby, though, right?
Well, no, the baby just gets possessed by Viggo the Carpathian.
But it's not his baby.
No, it's Dana's ex-husband baby. But it's him...
Could you do that? Would you be down for that? Like, yo... Like
for Sigourney Weaver in the mid-80s?
Like if you met a girl and she was like, hey, like, and she's wonderful, but she's like, hey, I got this kid from this other guy.
How old is the kid?
Baby.
I mean, it would depend on the lady. Right now in my life, that would be a pretty massive change, Logan. I'm a free spirit. I'm a tumbleweed.
Definitely feels like a deal breaker.
I blow in the wind. But I never want to say, I mean, like my knee-jerk reaction would be like, ooh, deal breaker. But to be perfectly honest...
Never
say never.
And you never want to say that. You never want to be like, that just makes you sound like a jerk.
It does.
Let's be honest with ourselves.
As a young man with nothing to tie me down.
Yeah.
No land.
You got a whole life ahead of you.
I got a whole life ahead of me. And if
Absolutely.
Some ravishing young woman was like, I want to spend the rest of it with you. You and little Rupert.
And my baby.
And I'd be like, great. But you know what? I have a good friend who's a single dad.
Yeah.
And he is in a wonderful relationship with a lovely lady, and they met after his boy was already 1.5.
Wow.
So, you know.
Anything's possible.
Anything's possible.
Love makes you do crazy things.
It does. It does.
Iowa Gambler's Test. Not that. Not the Ghostbuster thing.
Lay it on me!
Iowa Gambler's Test. There's two decks.
Just something occurs to me. Should we maybe have somebody compose us some, random aside wrap-up music, so like at the end of one of these crazy tangents, like Dez could just like cut in a piece of music. It's like do random aside.
I was thinking maybe just one of those like
a
timpani horn and like maybe one of those like silly trumpet. Yeah, like one of those maybe.
I kind of like the idea of a jingle.
You compose it, give it to Dez. I'm sure he'll roll it in there.
Sweet. I'm gonna have Paul Prado compose it.
There you go. Paul Prado's from 5 Second Films, too.
He's a delight.
He is. He really is a delightful human being.
Iowa Gambler's Test.
Iowa
right
Gambler's
there, we
Test.
Play the irony there is that we would play the, oh, my legs are tangled up in your headphones.
Yes.
It's getting kinky, folks. Go. Iowa Gambler's Test.
Let's see if I still remember this. More or less, one of the decks is stacked, and one of the other deck is not stacked. It is truly random. While okay. the one of the decks is definitely stacked against the player.
Okay.
They interview the player about the deck throughout the game, and the player will often start attributing negative, negative qualities to the unlucky deck, even though they don't have any empirical knowledge about the likelihood of what card they'll draw. More or less what it's saying is your intuition is correct. Your hunches do have some level of validity in decision making. And I'd have to say that's probably what the rat felt, because the rat was not 100% in using the information that
but
the
other
rat.
But it was statistically significant.
It was like 90% at the time.
That's pretty impressive.
So I assume it'd be like if we both had these things and we're playing.
I feel like I should go this way.
Yeah, I think it'd be a hunch. The other thing it reminds me of.
Do you think you could psych yourself out of it?
Do you think absolutely.
If someone was like, we're going to be implanting thoughts in your head, just go with it. And you'd be like, ooh, is that a real thought or did I imagine that it was a real thought?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, well, here comes the other thing. The emotive headset. You ever see the emotive headset? It was like
just fucking blowing my mind tonight.
What the
fuck is all this shit?
You know, man, you're into the future. You find out about these things.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm normally like you and I are running at roughly the same length. And I feel like you're just running circles around me tonight.
Sorry, dude.
I'm going to get into a second beer.
There you go. That's the trick. Second beer.
Okay, hold on. Let's just get that on.
We're drinking Negro Modelo tonight, by the way.
Did you guys pick up You did! Excellent.
He gave us a thumbs
up. I'm just speaking to the monitor.
So anyways, the emotive headset is an EEG headset. So, you know, like checking your brainwaves out.
Okay.
There were a few things that made it kind of fancy, mainly the price. I don't know if it actually ever came out. You must have been able
Wait,
to
Wait, is
one.
This those fucking things I saw at Comic-Con with the people wearing the damn ears that supposedly register your emotional...
Oh, like cat ears?
Yeah, and then they go up and down.
Yeah, but I'd say the difference is that one has it's like one point of contact. So really it's looking at general brain activity or at least activity in one spot. This has like 12 or 14. And so what it actually allowed you to do was after you train for a while, it gave you I think they got up to 3 or 4 axes of control. So what that meant was you could look at a box and after you trained yourself – move it up, down, left, and right with your brain. And I tried it out, and I know what it's like to have the force.
Where do I get to test this thing?
I don't know. Google Emotive. Emotiv. You might be able to buy one at this. You must be able to buy one. This was years ago. But like when you put it on, you have to train yourself. So they tell you like, just think about pushing that box. In my case, it was making it disappear or not disappear. So just like think about that box disappearing. And they record your brainwaves for that. And they're like, all right, make that box disappear. And like you're looking at it and you're thinking and like you can actually feel the box starting to disappear. And like it'll snap back a few times. And then you start picking up like there's a feeling in your head.
It's like training a muscle.
It's like training a muscle in your mind. And after a while, you just do it. But you actually – a muscle is the best analogy. You just feel in your head the box disappearing, and it disappears.
Are you at all familiar with the ancient Greek like artifacts that we have that we've found of – or maybe they're not found. Maybe they're just described. But they are essentially like they're a steel ball – with like a spout that's curved and you could fill them with water and then you could heat them up and they would spin, right? Because it would shoot steam out the end.
Okay.
And so one of the things that like I've always read about about these things is that scientists are just like amazed by it because the basic principle for a steam engine is right there. Like basically the ancient Greeks had like the basic components to puzzle the rest of their way to a steam engine but like never got there for whatever reasons, right? Do you ever think some shit like this is like that, like 1,000 years from now? It's like, it's amazing. Early man had this silly toy that just amused them so, and they never took the next logical step to the flip-dorp. And then it's like, oh, those foolish primitive 21st century.
Dude, absolutely. Like, hindsight is 20/20, but I love that this is turning into like, did you see?
There's this thing on the internet. This is what happens when we don't have a guest.
I'm fine with this. I feel like I'm just educating. So MIT's artificial intelligence lab on the New York Times Bits blog this weekend.
I feel like that's an obvious target for Luddite terrorism.
Luddite terrorism? What's that?
You know, Luddites terrorizing things.
New York Times is down. They're down. They're down with it.
Oh, I just meant the MIT artificial intelligence lab.
Well, dude, so people always think artificial intelligence equals robots that are sentient and talk like people. But artificial intelligence is really more just, interesting ways for computers to make decisions or that's really it, is computers making decisions. Mm-hmm. Or interpreting data in interesting ways.
I know adults that can't pass the Turing test. Living humans.
Where you say this is a computer?
Mm-hmm.
And we should talk about the Turing test at some point. But the block thing this weekend was about this new piece of software that they developed. And to me, this is that whole like, oh my God, why didn't we do this before? Because it's such a simple algorithm they're using. But more or less, they take video footage and they ramp up the delta from frame to frame between the different pixels.
Okay.
And so, for instance, right now as I'm looking at you, you're having blood rush in and out of your face. Right?
Stop.
But like your pulse, right?
Right.
And that is making tiny fluctuations in your coloring. And if I look at you with an iPhone camera, your red value, if each pixel is an RGB value, red, green, mm-hmm. blue value, that red value is going to change a little bit every time.
Right.
Especially relative to the pixels around it. And they just take that change and they ramp it up. And so the demo of this is they're like, yeah, like we can just for the computer tell you about those differences in the pixels that are very small and not perceptible to human vision and give you your pulse just from the camera. But with this software, we can now actually affect the video. And so they're showing this video of this old dude, and then they turn on the software and this dude's face is more or less just flashing white and red, like it's just strobing.
That is awesome.
And then it's actually strobing at different times throughout his face, so they can actually follow the pathway of the blood.
Yeah. Through your body.
Exactly. And they're like, this is great for babies that are born. What's the term when they're born too early?
Premature
babies, because you're not supposed to touch them. So this way we don't have to put a pulse on them. We just watch them with the camera and we can see their pulse in their face.
Do you think people will be trained to send like Morse code signals with their pulses? They'll use biofeedback to train their pulse signals, and then the people will use Google Glass to read Morse code. Pulse
what a
flashes.
Battle! It kind of reminds me of there was this hacker made a birds making noises, bird chirps. Artificial bird chirper that actually was encrypting messages in the audio spectrum, and then you'd have to have another microphone that listened to the bird chirps and turn it back into English.
That's fabulous.
It's amazing.
That's absolutely fabulous.
I don't know why we're talking about the baby's strobes. Oh, the one last thing about that, really quickly, you can do it with footage that already exists. So they actually did it.
What?
So they did it with film.
Like they can pull that much data from like
from the they fucking did Batman Begins or whatever with whatever.
I mean, I assume it has to be of a certain fidelity. Like it's one thing to like pull a 35mm print of some old movie versus like a VHS camcorder tape.
Sure. But they did the Bruce Wayne, like they do Bruce Wayne on the DVD, and they're like, see, when we turn it on, we can actually see the pulse of Bruce Wayne, and we can see like where the makeup's caked on a little bit thicker.
Creepy as fuck.
It's fucking wild, dude.
That's awesome.
You talk about the fucking future.
How we doing in there, guys? You bored stiff yet? I'm just talking to our producers.
Great.
Notice that he just talked about the sound quality. There was no actual subjective opinion.
Man, we can't.
The relative
entertainment value. We can't hunt for validation here.
That's my whole life is hunting for validation.
There's a little rat-a-tat playing.
Hey.
I just want to look at the time. Okay, so going back to the mind meld.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about brain-to-brain interfaces.
Brain-to-brain interfaces, okay.
Well, Ben, would you ever agree to getting a brain-to-brain interface installed?
Short answer, yes with an if. Long answer, no.
We're only looking for long answers.
Okay.
Elaborate, bro.
I am naturally, in certain respects, cautious with my own meat bag form. feels like a brain-to-brain interface would be a very radical, would require a rather radical amount of surgery on my most delicate and valued organ. Womp womp, go hunting for puns there, everybody. Talking about my brain! And that would make me a little nervy. If I knew that it was safe physically for me to do that, like it wouldn't, like, it's like, my, oh, it's, yeah, you can do it. It's a 1 in 5 chance of severe crippling brain damage.
Let's say it's just a hat you put on.
Oh, okay. It. Do I look good in it?
It's a great looking hat on you.
Okay.
Or it's an invisible hat. Some
but
magic.
Then my hat would be, my hair would be all mashed down, and people would look at me like, why is that guy's hair all mashed in a weird
okay,
angle?
Okay, it's actually a sticker you put on behind your earlobe.
I'm sorry, I'm
like,
being
no, that's
about
great.
This.
No, I'm okay with this. It's like those seasickness pads that you put behind your ear.
Okay. 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 Yeah. And, yeah, I would play with it. I mean, can I? It really depends on what it can let me do. Can I tune into people? Can I reject melds if people are like, yo, meld with me? And then in my head, I'm like, no, you're a crazy homeless guy that I just walked by. Versus like, you know, somebody cool, Neil deGrasse Tyson's all like, yo, Ben, let me show you what space looks like from my point of view. And I'm like, let's do it, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Well, let's talk about realistically what would actually happen if we had this. I assume it'd be an opt-in. Nobody's going to go for you know, free broadcast mode of their thoughts.
Well, sure.
Or of receiving thoughts. I could see them doing an output, but they're not going to be everybody who has a brain thought. Just send it in my
just
way.
Just have this image of me walking down the street with my brain broadcasting, sunshine and lollipops and moonbeams everywhere, just blaring out across people walking by me. Just,
who gave this guy a mind-to-mind interface?
God damn it, stupid asshole. Yeah, okay, so... Yeah, you can opt in, opt out. I would definitely do it. How could you not? How could you not at least see what that's like? Right there is like the closest you'll ever get to proving definitively to yourself that you're not alone in the world and everything else is just a complex illusion.
I don't know if you can prove that definitively.
No, but I said as close as you will get to.
True. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I guess it goes to the extent of the mind meld. Like, is it like a full-on Vulcan mind meld where it's like...
Yeah, it's like, it's you like know, if you and I do it right now, it's like, I know why Logan is afraid of spiders.
Yeah, I know Ben. Like, I am Ben.
Yeah.
I get it.
Or is it simply, you can hear what I'm thinking, and if we worked on it, you could maybe see through my eyes.
Yeah.
Which would be trippy as hell anyway.
I mean, I feel like more realistically, rather than having this... You ever see Flash Gordon?
No.
Fantastic movie, but there's a mind control telephone. Or sorry, a
no. Thought. Go back to the mind control telephone.
It's thought telephone, right? Where it's you know it's like Flash Gordon incoming, and they're just thinking with their thoughts. And I feel like that's most people's idea of mind reading is this somehow singular stream of information that goes the speed
right,
of talking.
Right, but you don't think that way. The only person that you would ever think that way would be like if you're like mind melding with like a highly experienced Buddhist monk. They can like focus into a deep meditative state and be like, hello Logan. I am Rinpoche Lamcha. And then meanwhile, when you talk to him, you're like, hey, would you have a corn and there's a car? And it's a monk that robes gray all over my golfer. Oh, my phone feels funny against my leg.
Fair enough. Yeah, but I assume it would be more like the network of brains where we just are together.
But I wonder, but you know, it's one of those things like we don't. What I find super fascinating about it is like we really would be pushing our brains into a space that it has no business or experience being in. So it's not like when we like put a man in space and we're like, ooh, we're putting a person's body in microgravity and the body just can't handle that. Or when you put someone in microgravity, we know if it goes on long enough. Yeah, their bone density goes down. Their heart gets weak. They have to do all these things to keep their body in shape properly. And then, like, another example that's a little more extreme, for instance, is, like, from what I understand, birds can't be in microgravity because birds rely on gravity to help them swallow water. And so without some form of gravity, a bird will effectively, like, dehydrate unless they have some way to force moisture into their system. Mm-hmm. But – all of this comes down to just a matter of degrees of a system that our biological systems are used to. It's just – it's a different amount of something it deals with. gravity. Our brains have for millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of years, as far as like the human evolutionary chain goes, as far as I know, we haven't been any sort of hive mind for hundreds of millions of years. Billions, perhaps? We may.
I think it depends.
But what I'm saying is like, I think when that happens, the results are going to be strange and wondrous, because we will literally be, for the first time, doing something that the brain has no experience doing. And I wonder also if the results won't be highly subjective, individualized, and random. Like, it won't be something where everyone is like, oh, yeah, when you do a brain meld, yeah, you get, like, this weird buzzing sensation, and then all of a sudden you're, like, aware of, like, this kind of spot in the back of your consciousness where you're kind of aware of someone else's emotions or whatever, because each brain already kind of does things more or less the same but is all handling it a little differently. It won't be like, well, when Logan does brain melds with people, you know, he describes it as like sitting next to an invisible person that was whispering things in his ear, because your brain is going to go like, whoa, 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 whoa. Where the fuck is this sensory information coming from? This is not attached to anything I know. And then your brain, for whatever reason, will just go, you know what? I'm going to pretend it's a whisper. I'm gonna pretend this is a whisper. And then my brain, when melded, would be like, what the fuck is all this shit? You know what? Everything is going to come in as if Tom Jones is singing it. So it's just for whatever weird thing in my brain. So it'll be like, oh, this is Logan and we're melding.
Well, I think what you're
brain.
Describing is almost like how people describe like a stroke. Like that to me is the analogy you're starting to build. But I'd actually think, and of course we won't know until it happens, but I guess that's futurism for you. I doubt it's going to be a highly individualized person-by-person experience. In fact, I think the mind meld moment for Westerners is the first time that I think we'll be able to sort of have a post-op Eastern experience. I mean, have you ever heard the studies where they look at an Eastern person's EEG, or I guess a brain, an MRI,
sure,
when they talk about their family members versus a Western person's
yeah, I don't know if I'm picking up what you're putting down, but please continue. Before I disagree,
the section of your brain that is your self identity is only you in a Western society. Mm-hmm. The moment you move to a person in an Eastern society, all their close friends and family actually are rolled into that self identity section of your brain. Mm-hmm. So how they relate to others versus their quote unquote self is dramatically different than we are, and it seems like this.
Yeah,
having this mind meld moment
is
your moment to
fundamentally different than that, and I'll say why. Because how you identify yourself individually, regardless of how you roll up your personal identity, whether you're much more individualized in this Western standpoint, or whether there's this more universal concept incorporating friends and family members, doesn't change the fact that no matter how much you roll up your identity with other people, say we have a man in Cambodia that has EEGs and, you know, he wraps up his mother and his wife and his children and his father and all of his friends.
They're
all wrapped up in the self-identity.
They're wrapping up.
It doesn't change the fact that he does not have literal access to their sensory information or their memories or their emotions. His sense of identity, certainly his individual sense of identity, certainly is more expansive. Mm-hmm. But the actual, like, that's him taking a concept and his brain handling it differently. Whereas what we're talking about is literally, like, in the most crude sense of the matter, for the first time ever, something outside of your own sensory apparatus dumping sensory information into your brain.
So the other thing I have issues with, yeah, that's right, we're going to fight about this. Is that
bring it, shit brick?
That this has not
I
happened.
I hope I didn't just peek the mic. No.
Is that this? I like you're always constantly looking at the television.
They're
like,
behind me.
Tell me.
Like they're looking at the back of my head. And it's all creepy and shit.
Is this being the first time something like this has happened in history? I'd argue, from a very literal standpoint, Siamese twins or any sort of conjoined twin that is sharing organs, they definitely have accounts of experiencing each other's, I mean, they have interweaved neural systems.
Well, they have arguably
that is what a mind meld will be.
I think that's pretty arguable. From what I understand and from what I've read, admittedly, it's limited. At best, under real observable conditions. And for the intents of our argument, I'm talking about, like, it's all well and good to, you know, suppose things have happened, but from, like, observable seeing the results, the only, as far as I understand, there's only, like, one recorded case in modern history of, like, conjoined twins that are conjoined at the head and actually share, like, large chunks of their brain structure.
But
and even that is highly debatable as to how much they're sharing and in what way.
Well, it depends whether they're thought sharing, but as far as sensory information is concerned, a lot of those conjoined twins are sharing a lot of their,
sure,
their sympathetic
that
systems.
But that goes more into a shared sympathetic system versus a remote sympathetic system. Like, you can literally go like, oh, well, the reason you're picking up, like, you know, your Siamese twin touching something hot is because your nervous systems are literally physically entangled.
But I think that that's kind of what...
I think it dances on the edge.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that they're ultimately there, you're still not breaking from... I mean, it's different. It's monkeyed up a little bit. But it's still inputting information in a way that your brain, that a brain kind of knows how to deal with. And for that matter, if you're talking about a conjoined twin, you're talking about a brain that has been raised since its boot up to deal with that. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, taking one of us at like 30, cracking open our skull, screwing in a socket, and then jamming a plug in there.
I think we're still going to be pretty plastic to it. I think there was a thing I was reading a few weeks ago regarding humans being basically like a brain that is designed to add tools to its system.
Oh, yeah. I remember you talking about
and
this.
As we get tools, they more or less become an extension of ourselves.
Right.
With the computer, you know, how we use the internet, it more or less becomes an extension of yourself. If you ever parallel parked and actually felt like you're getting closer to the other car,
sure,
is my personal analogy to this.
Right.
This just seems like another step along that path where our brains are designed to just grab things from the environment and be like, now you're part of me. You are me.
I don't disagree at all. I think that this is one of those moments where you're going to start to see that kind of like singularity sort of leap point where we're going from like things that have been naturally building on one another at like a very measurable rate. Like it's the difference between like, oh, like if you really want to boil it down, like, oh, opposable thumbs are our first tool. And then, you know, like a twig to get shit out of an anthill is the second tool. And shit gets more and more and more advanced until we're using, you know, Google Glass heads-up display to, like, give us new shit that somebody else built. And then we're interacting with all this stuff. And we have all these amazing tools that let us do all this crazy stuff. But it's still just stuff on the outside that we're going further and further.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is one of those moments where when we really start to do that, it's going to be, like, a giant, terrifying, like, leap. It's not us running up the stairs, it's us strapping on a jetpack and zooming to the top of the stairs.
Well, I think that gets into assuming what the buildup to this is. Like, I don't think it's
going to be a super gradual, like, 100-year process of learning.
And I think to me, the gradual version of this is the inclusion of biometric input. That would be step one. So, incredibly precise eye tracking.
Sure. Why would you need incredibly precise eye tracking, though, if you're brain melding?
I'm saying prior to brain melding. As far as the gradual build up to the point where we're actually melding brains.
I feel like those are two separate tracks.
I think it goes biometrics. So no, and then using those biometrics to do responsive UIs and responsive systems. And then you have predictive systems, which is more or less
intelligence. Why would you need a predictive system based on biometrics if you have a functioning brain interface? You're never going to be able
talking about the brain. I'm saying leading before that brain interface comes, I think all those other steps.
But what I'm saying is like if you're just telling me now that like a week ago we just had two rats exchanging information directly brain to brain and that like we're also biometric and predictive stuff is obviously a lot further along than that. Those feel like two parallel tracks that are leading towards different things.
I think,
have you ever heard the phrase that like I've heard certain medical scientists say that like the and other scientists like say specifically like that the age of robotics in medicine will be like strangled in the cradle by the age of like biological engineering. Like if we that basically, like, we're finally getting to a point with robotics where we have, like, these amazing, you know, things that are almost to the Star Wars level of, like, you know, artificial hands and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But by the same token, we're developing technology and, like, stem cells and things like that where it's like, oh, well, why would we strap a metal hand on you when we can grow you a new one? Now, admittedly, like, you know, real good robotic prostheses are much further along than stem cell stuff. I think this is probably a statement that was made, like, 10 or 15 years ago before stem cell stuff, we realized how complex it really was.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels to me like what you're saying is that, like, biometric stuff, like that kind of data usage and then predictive things based on that definitely is fascinating and will go, but I think it'll be – it's a half step towards the brain interface. But the brain interface, it's not like a linear thing where it's like, well, first we have to figure out biometrics to figure out predictive to figure out brain. It's that like, oh, biometrics and predictive are over here. And then meanwhile, the brain interface is just chugging along.
Well, there's additive technology, but I think what I'm talking about is more additive – in cultural and interfaces.
Okay.
So getting accustomed to a system being like, Ben, I know exactly what you want because of biometrics and because of your behavior in prior situations. Mm-hmm. So you start getting used to that being a way you interface with
Remind
a world beyond yourself.
Remind me to come
yourself.
Back on a tangent to that once you're done with your
okay.
thought.
The other thing as we talk about it is I'm maybe something that I made a mistake of not thinking like this earlier is
you did and you should be ashamed.
I feel shitty. Is the biometric stuff and the predictive system stuff is still individualistic and functional
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the mind meld thing, which I don't think we're going to mind meld and be more functional individuals. Mind melding almost feels like a totally different, weird, hyperhuman experience.
But isn't the implication of mind melding also that we will have man-machine interface? Like, if I can share knowledge with you through a machine
intermediary, I think we're gonna have a lot easier time connecting to brains than we are going to connecting a brain to a computer in an effective fashion.
I'm gonna disagree with you with a caveat. I think that connecting two brains together won't be too tough. I think making sense of what those connections are capable of doing will be far easier with machines than they will be between two people.
Well, I mean, you already have – so the guy who made the mind meld rats – I like that it's just one mad scientist dude – is the guy who made the monkey robot arm last
year. One of my friends worked on that postdoc project at Brown University.
You know what I'm talking about? The monkey –
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Tell us about the monkey arm, Ben.
So the monkey arm thing is – and I'm sure I'll miss a crucial detail here and there, but there was a project at Brown University, if I'm recalling it correctly, whereby they took a monkey and they created an array of little probes that let them carefully record the monkey's brain activity. And they gave the monkey a joystick, and on a screen there was a robotic arm that was controlled by the joystick that the monkey could manipulate to either press a button or like drop a ball into a bucket. And by doing so, would release a food pellet into the monkey's enclosure. So they recorded the monkey doing this a whole bunch, the monkey, and they recorded all of his brain activity. And then they wrote a computer program that would read the monkey's brain activity as if he was using the joystick and mimic those actions through the robotic arm. And then after a little while, once they were sure that this computer program worked really well, they shut the joystick off but didn't take it away from the monkey. And so the monkey continued to use the joystick to control the arm, but – it wasn't controlling the arm at all. There was a computer program that was reading the monkey's brain activity and controlling the arm for it. And then disturbingly enough, after a short amount of time, the monkey put together what was going on some level and stopped using the joystick altogether and would just sit there and manipulate the robotic arm to give itself food.
Same person who did the rat mind meld.
It was.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
Creepy as fuck.
So that's where we're headed, is robot arm brain interface.
Where we're headed is all of us having a monkey in our apartment controlling a robot arm.
With its brain.
That's as far as it goes.
That's
my vision of the shitbag future. It's like 50 years later, we've done a ton of research. This is as good as it gets. Two rats that can teach each other to go through a maze and a monkey that can feed itself.
So one last note on the rat. And I Alex, how are we doing for time? Okay, so this rat is going to be our this is the rat episode. This also, by the way, Ben, you I don't know how you feel about this. I'm pretty sure this is going to be our first episode. I say this is going to be.
I like it. It's got a nice introductory feel.
Yeah.
Either that or the true first episode that we recorded, that had a similar vibe to it.
I feel like this one's better. I think all the ones before this, let's just delete them.
Delete them?
No one will ever know just about the other episodes. The fuck those episodes.
Fuck them.
Fuck them.
Fuck them.
But anyway, so this rat thing, the one thing that the dude pointed out was what makes this totally interesting isn't just two rats talking to each other. It's the N plus one rats talking to each other. And what happens when we hook up 100 rats interconnectedly?
Are you familiar with the semi-mythical creature called a rat king?
I don't think that's mythical. I think they find those in New York all the time.
No.
It's just a bunch of rats with their tails stuck together.
Yeah, it's quasi-mythical from what I understand. Like, no one has ever observed an honest-to-God rat king.
So is this like cow-tipping where everybody just assumes that somebody saw one once, but no, if you actually search YouTube now, there isn't any, which in my opinion, if it's not on YouTube, it's probably fake.
My understanding, because I get bored and I'm like this, there's a couple like examples of rat kings held in like old European naturalist museums. But there's some debate as to whether or not they're a real,
or whether like they stuffed in a ring.
Like some jagoff in the 17th century is like, wow, like, I'm just gonna tie a bunch of rat tails.
It's like a jackalope or a unicorn where some dude just messed with it.
Right. You're just describing a psychic rat king.
Yes, that's absolutely what I'm describing.
That's horrifying.
I'm just kind of curious what the capabilities of the 100 and rat king is. Like, will it be able to talk?
You know what? I hate to say it, but if you put 100 really dumb people together in a room, they still don't know how to do calculus.
We're not talking about 100 dumb people, though. We're talking about 100 dumb people's brains coming together. We're talking about 100 times the neurons. When it gets wild to me. I don't think the rat's going to speak in perfect English and do math for us.
But
I just think it's going to start
doing. Isn't it by weight? Like, doesn't a whale have like 100 times our neurons by weight? That's all in one big motor engine. And
here's what I think I actually want. I want a rat matrix. I want like an orb of rats looking in all directions, neurally linked, with control over a hexapod that carries them. So I'm talking about a disco ball of neurally linked rats with six legs that allow it to carry it around.
I think you're making an assumption about like what drives a rat brain, where it's like even if you have 100 rat brains sitting together. Like by, like, I don't know, brain mass. I'm just, excuse me while I just go off on a random tangent about things I don't understand. We should have a jingle for that written as well. but like if you have a rat brain and let's say 40% by mass of that rat brain is devoted to its like basic physical upkeep, breathing, blood, whatever. And then like another 30% of that brain is just devoted to being like, food, mate. And like no matter how smart a rat is, that part of the brain is just like, fuck, feed, fuck, feed, run from big things. If you put 100 of those together, and then there's like this tiny little like 5% that can do critical reasoning. You put 100 of those together and you still have a huge percentage of that omni-brain just going, fuck, feed.
I think that's what I'm curious to see what happens. Like, will they –
I think the hexapod goes, and then rips itself to pieces. And then a bunch of rats that are all connected stroke out.
I'm guessing they become an incredibly effective hunting, killing machine.
No fucking
way. And they can solve the same level of problem that a young octopus can solve. Not an old octopus, not an old wise octopus. But yeah, a young octopus. Like work a tumbler lock.
Okay, I'm gonna
octopus.
Go this far. I'm gonna say, as far as I know, I could be wrong. Rats don't hunt in packs. They don't function like
this.
This isn't
a pack though. This is
a pack.
Is a capital RAT. This is a rot. This is a fucking rot. Nah. It's 100 rots.
Don't care.
Dude,
I don't buy
different.
It.
If you had
just pitched to me 100 wolves that were all neurologically linked, then I could buy your hexapod thing because
they're
a pack animal. They already have structures that working together and doing those things makes sense. So eventually they'd quickly be like, holy shit, we can all do this. We're not like smelling each other's anal gland scents or like hearing like, oh, someone's going woo over there. That means someone's going to the left. We can think to each other. This is fucking rad. then those wolves would be incredibly dangerous. But at the same time, would they if they're all in one hexapod? Because then there is, like, a thing that's used to being distributed, all being locked physically in one place.
I think
now,
they figured
it out. Now,
let's
say all of those wolves, but they lose their main advantage. What if all those wolves had their own hover jet skis and they were all mentally connected? Now you have something dangerous. You have a neurologically linked swarm of robo-wolves, and those motherfuckers would know what to do with it. Rats, a rathropod, I feel like... The best case scenario for the rathropod would be like it steals the biggest wheel of cheese it can, and then it tries to fuck like a Mayor McCheese statue outside of a McDonald's.
A Mayor McCheese statue. Thank you. So, guys, that is the fucking futurist for this week. Let's get one last clink in there. This is Ben and Logan signing off. May the future be with you.
May the future be with you.